Well, good morning to everyone. When I am asked to come to Texas and speak, the first thing I do is to check for a specific place. Yesterday I got to the hotel and checked on that, and I found out that I was 0.7 miles from Whataburger. And I know it's going to be a good week. That's just the way that works. Whataburger is my favorite place. I hope none of you own a Wendy's franchise, but if you do, I like Wendy's too. You can tell I like everything. But it really is good to be with you, and I have looked forward to this. I was in Centerville, Texas last week. I was with Monty last night, and I called it Centerville. He said, it's not Centerville, it's Centerville. So Centerville, Texas is where I was. So I got to meet some folks that I'm sure all of you know, at least many of you know. And they know a lot of you, and they speak very highly of you. But I've looked forward to coming. I know several of you from my past. And, I lived in Florida for a long time and worked at Florida College. So some of you who went to school there about 1,000 years ago, I know and I'm aware of you. And it's really good to see you again. I've known Harold and Beverly for a good while. Beverly's one of my favorites because she's from Arkansas. That's where I'm from. But it really is good to be with you. And I hope that the time that we spend this week is helpful to you. I pray that it will be. And I appreciate coming. Reagan has kept me up today on some things and about the congregation here. All those top things. And so I've been anxious to come. I'm glad that we can spend some time together. I'm sorry my wife is not here. She was going to come with me both weeks. And she got sick before I left to start down here about a week or so ago. And the day after she stayed, our basement flooded. So you know, maybe that's the Lord saying she needs to stay here because the basement's going to flood. I'm going to talk about that Monday night. So tomorrow night. So we'll talk a little bit more about that thing. But it is good to be with you. And I so much appreciate the fact that I am able to come. And I'm glad today that the middle school and high school students are in here. Because what I'm going to talk about with you today is something that I really think is a critical thing in reference to understanding who we are. We're going to talk about faith this week, and we're going to talk about some aspects of faith. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time trying to define faith. You know, I think we understand. All of us have a concept of what faith is, and we know how important it is in reference to our lives. We walk by faith, not by sight. So it becomes critical to who we are and what we're trying to accomplish. But as I begin this morning, I want you to think about something with me. I pulled into Lufkin yesterday and I saw this sign. Matter of fact, I saw it on both ends of the city. So I like the sign. Somebody tell me about how many folks live in Lufkin, Texas. Since all you people live here. There's some of you know it's better when I start walking towards you. He's looking at that, I don't blame you, bud. I'll move away. I'll go with your sister. How about that? How many live in Lufkin?
35,000 to 40,000.
All right, let's see. Here's what Google said. That's excellent, Ray. You're a good man. Okay, about 35,837. I don't know what year that was, but that was about. How about Texans? How many people live in Texas? Gobs? Did you say gobs? That's a good Texas word. Gobs of people. 28.3 is what. It's what, you know, Google's never wrong, right? So I asked Google, and Google said 28.3. This is going to get easier. This test is going to get easier. How about the U.S.?
Yeah,
that's pretty good. About 325 million people. That's a lot of folks. A lot of folks. You know where we're going with this, don't you? You know what the next one is? Okay, we're going. Well, I'm going to ask you, how many people in the world? How many? Somebody said
6.7 billion.
Well, I got a little bit more than that. I got 7.7 billion people, folks. That's a lot of folks. That's a lot of folks. And I want to tell you about that 7.7 billion people. Most of them have the same problem, and some of us have the same problem that some of those people have. Most of those people. And I'm going to suggest to you this morning that what most of those people's biggest problem is they have no idea who they are. And you may say, well, they all know who they are. I don't think they do. And I'm not altogether sure we sometimes know or at least remember who we are. And I think that's why so many problems are in the world. And that's one reason why I'm very thankful this morning that some of the younger people, that the middle school and high school students at least, are in this auditorium. Because I think it is critical for you to understand who you are. Now, your parents and your grandparents and all those who are older like the rest of us ought to know who we are. But sometimes we forget. We're going to talk about that this morning. This is a lesson that when somebody comes to me or when I go to someone and say, would you be willing to study the Bible with me, regardless of what level or at what point they are or regardless of their background, this is the first lesson that I want to talk to them about, because to me, this is critically important. If you don't get this, then you don't get really who you really are, and most people don't. Just like this morning when you came in and if I was able to meet you, I would introduce myself and I would tell you where. Last night I met Tim and I came up to him and I shook his hand and he told me who he was, Tim Beeman, and I told him who I was. But that's not really who we are. And you may say, what are you talking about? Well, he could change his name. The fact that he's Tim differentiates him from me. I'm not Tim. He ought to be Kenny, but for some reason his parents named him Tim, which is a stupid name. But that's okay. Tim, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. You know that. But he could go to the courthouse and change his name, but he'd still be who he is. You see what I'm saying? So that's why this is critical. So I want you to consider something with me. I want you to think about if you found yourself this morning on an island such as this, and here's the situation. You're totally by yourself. You don't know anything, but you have the ability to think and to reason. We're going to talk about some of these things this morning in both the class and the sermon. But if you had the ability to think, but you didn't know anything, I want you to tell me one question you'd ask yourself. One.
Okay, welcome.
Why am I here? Very good. Why am I here? That'd be a great one. What's another? Very fundamental question. How can I get off? That'd be a good one. How am I going to survive? Or more specifically, what am I going to eat? That's what I'd be thinking about. I'll stop talking about food, I promise. But that's very close to my heart, unfortunately. What else? You don't know anything. Why am I here is really important. But even more fundamental than that, who am I and what am I would be? That gets to why am I here, but that's all right. But how did I get here? Yeah, what's my origin? Who put me here or how did I get here? So I think we're talking about primarily these three questions. Who am I? Who put me here? And why am I here? Now, may I suggest something to you? Most people don't know the answers to those questions. What do you think? Most people, that 7.7 billion people, they have no idea about that. And I'll tell you why they have no idea about that. How I know? Because of how they live their lives. They live their lives according to the answers that they want, not the answers that they know are right. But everybody wants to know the answers to these questions. Several years ago, I was in Fresno, California. I was staying with some folks out there. And as I would typically do, if I'm staying with people, when it's bedtime, I would look on the shelf and I would notice whatever books were on the shelf. And if something interested me, I'd just pull it off the shelf and I'd start to read. And I found this book. It was called The Big Questions, A Short Introduction to Philosophy by Robert Solomon. There have been several editions through the years. But I found out that the family I was staying with, their daughter was going to a community college in California, and this was one of her books that she, a textbook that she had. And it was from a philosophy class that everybody in the community college system in California at the time, that would have been in the 80s, had to take this philosophy class. And notice what it's about. It's a short introduction to philosophy. And it's called The Big Questions. That's exactly what everybody wants to know. Everybody wants to know the answers to this. But unfortunately, at least those who are studying that textbook are getting some pretty crazy answers to those questions. But everybody wants to know, folks. Everybody needs to know. And if you don't want to know, you're going to live life the way most people live their life. They just do what they want to do, right? And they don't give really any credence to what God wants them to do or why that's even important. But if you don't get the answers to this question, the right answers to these three questions that we posed this morning, your life is never going to be good. So that's why God said, I'm going to tell you about those answers. I want to talk to you a little bit about what it means to be made in God's image. We'll get to that in just a minute. But the way that I'm going to begin this is when I talk to people about these lessons, I'm going to say, now, if God is God, and you have to begin with a couple of assumptions. And if they don't agree with these assumptions, then we start in a different place. But I ask them, do you believe in God? And do you believe the Bible is His Word? And if the answer to both those questions is yes, then we have a point of reference that we can begin to go from and start to teach it. But if not, then we start at other places. But if they believe those two things, and I say, okay, then you do believe that in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. Oh, yeah. I believe that. Okay. So let's look at some. Let's look now at you. If God created everything, let's notice how He created you so we get to this. As this is a passage which many of you know. Genesis 1:26, then God said, let us make man in our image, according to our likeness. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, over the cattle, over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. So God created man in His own image. In the image of God, He created him, male and female, He created them. This is the key. And it's a key that sometimes we forget. What is an image?
Coming back to you. I'm walking slower, so I have plenty of time.
Light.
A what?
Lightness.
The lights. So you can cheat it. That's in there, right? That's a good answer, right? An image is a lights. And do any of you, have any of you ever seen my father? Here you go. You're thinking like you're ready. You might have. You ever seen my dad ever? I want somebody to tell me what you think my father looks like. And be careful.
You.
That's an easy way out. Yeah, he looks like me. You think he's tall? Yep. You think he's overweight? Sir?
He worked hard.
He worked hard. That's right. Very good. Do you think my dad is handsome? It's okay if I ask you that question. He's what? He's probably fine. It's good. I like the thing. That's not a kidding about it. Yeah. Do you think I look like my dad? Yeah, I look like my dad. If my dad walked in here, even if you weren't looking for him, but I told you, my dad might show up this week. If he walked through that door, you'd say, yes, you can be dead. Because you look like him. There are a lot of things about my dad that are like me. Better said, there are a lot of things like about me that are like me. This is a little too much information for you. I've got two spots on the back of both my legs that don't have any hair on them. They don't have any hair on my dad's anymore. Those are the same two spots. Isn't that amazing? My dad, if he's lying on the floor watching television, if he's too lazy to go get the remote, he'll change channels with his toe. I did that one time, and my wife looked at me and she said, don't you ever do that. I said, I won't even watch TV again. I didn't even do that. So I do things like that, but am I my dad? Not my dad. Are we like God? Yes. Are we God? No. So how? Here's the question. Here's the critical question. If we're made in His image, and if we're made in His likeness, we are like Him, but we're not Him. So what is it about Him that is like us? Somebody tell me something about God that's like, about us that's like us. We're eternal. Okay, we have an eternal part in us. We have, I think the way I might say that, and I like the way you said it, but we have a spirit. We have a soul. Sometimes those are used interchangeably. But we have an eternal part of us that's going to live on in eternity. That's good. That, God is spirit. God is eternal. What else?
Reason.
Yeah, we can think. Now, we're going to talk a lot about that. We can reason. We can think. Matter of fact, for the rest of this class, I'm going to talk about that a lot. Because when I'm talking to people, I want them to understand God made you a certain way. And you have some obligations to Him. to use what He has given you. I would tend to say something like this. What does it mean to be made in God's image? I just put three things up here. We have a spirit side, okay? And I think we all know that that's not easy. You know, my spirit being, my spiritual realm, the way my spirit operates, that's not easy for me to comprehend. God gives me information about that. He's revealed something about that in His Word, but that still isn't easy for me to fully grasp. But He's given me that. He's made me a moral being. He's made me to have the ability to reason, as the third one says, to determine what is right and wrong. And I have to do that. Now we live in a world that is continuing to digress from that idea, but that doesn't eliminate the fact that people are moral beings. All human beings are moral. And we can reason and think. This is not an exhaustive list, but this is at least part, it seems to me, of what it means to be made in the image of God. Now, that's the easy part. The easy part is to think about ways that happens. The hard part is to practice what is demanded of us because of that. I want you to look at a passage in Psalm, the 8th chapter. David said, "When I consider your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars which you have ordained, what is man that you're mindful of him? And the son of man that you visit him, for you have made him a little lower than the angels, and you have crowned him with glory and honor. You have made him to have dominion over the works of your hands. You put all things under his feet, all sheep and oxen, even the beasts of the field, the birds of the air, and the fish of the sea that pass through the paths of the sea." This is a psalm of David. Tell me some things that David was. He was a... I'll give you the king. What did you say?
King and
adulterer. King and adulterer. Both of those. Shepherd. A what?
Musician.
Excellent. I'm going to tell you something about that. I was teaching at VBS one time. This was several years ago. I think it was a fifth grade class. And I asked this same question. I said, "Tell me some things David was." And one boy raised his hand and said he was a magician. And I said, "Are you sure?" He said, "Yeah. He was a magician." I said, "Are you 100% sure?" He said, "Yeah, he played the harp. He was a magician." I said, "You mean he was a musician?" And he said, "That's what I said. He was a magician." So I said, "Okay, that's what he was." That's right. That's exactly what it was. Now, it seems to me that when he wrote this song, it may have been that he was considering maybe a time of his life when he was a shepherd boy, when he was on a Judean hillside, and he was tending sheep. He had an opportunity to think about. As a matter of fact, he said, "When I consider your heavens," what does it mean to consider something? If you consider something, what do? You think about it, right? You think about it, I'm going to add another word. You think about it deliberately. When you give really strong consideration or any consideration to something, you're thinking about it, but you're thinking about it having to deliberate over it. It's typically something that you consider something that's important to, like where you might go to school, or if you're going to accept a job offer, or some things like that. Who you're going to marry comes into play. You know, when my wife and I started dating, first couple times we went out and had a good time, and I dropped her back at her apartment. After about three or four times, I thought, this is going pretty well. I kind of like this. And apparently she does, because when I ask her to go again, she says yes, and we go out. We have a good time together. And so, over the course of several months, we began to think about, consider whether or not we might be candidates to marry each other. At first, we did that independently. We didn't talk about it, but within a few months, instead of just dropping her off, we'd sit in the car and I'd say, kind of here, thought about maybe doing this permanently. I don't remember how I phrased it or something like that, some crazy thing, And she said, "Well, as a matter of fact, I have." We started talking about that. And we talked about that for several months, till finally she asked me to marry her, and I said, "Sure, I'll be back." I said, "Just kept well, that's how it happened, but." She said she would, and I appreciate it. But we had to consider. David said, "When I consider your heavens, the work of your fingers." The work of your fingers has something to do with the fact that God created. Your fingers are the things that you make things with. He says, "God, when I think about the fact that you made everything," he said, "what is man
If you're mindful. And the Son of Man that you visited, those are really two Hebrew idioms that I think are really saying the same thing. But the point of it is, why is it that you consider us? You ever thought about the fact that out of 7.7 billion people, God knows a lot about you? He knows how many hairs are on your head. He hears your every prayer. Think about it. You can't even fathom that, can you? Part of why you can't fathom it, because you're not God. God knows those kinds of things about you because He cares about you. And David, in this psalm, it seems to me, he is asking, okay, why is it that you care about me? And even past that, how have you made me and how do I need to respond to you? So here's what I want you to do for just a minute. I want you to consider some things that he says in this psalm. And really he compares us, human beings, to other parts of creation. And I want you to think about these things with me. Because it goes back to this idea of how God made me. He made me to have faith. He had me to reach a point in my life where I can look at things and think about things and reason about things and reach conclusions about things that says, okay, I should believe in God. That's what we're talking about, having the ability to do that. And what I want you to do this morning is be reminded of that so that you don't fail Him on it. So that you don't stop using that mind to do the things that God wants you to do. So He says, I want to compare you to several things. In this context, He does talk about stars. He said, you have made the moon and stars. Somebody tell me what a star can do. Star can basically do two things. What? Shine. If it's not shining, what's it doing? I'm not much of a scientist, but typically, if it's not shining, it's dying. Okay? It's either burning or it's burning up. Pretty much all of it. Does any of the credit or the discredit go to the star? No. Nobody wakes up. First of all, I guess you don't wake up with a star. You go to bed with a star, right? Nobody goes up to the star and says, hey, you're doing great tonight. Proud of you. Just keep up the good work. And nobody says to a star when it dies, man, you're terrible. What happened to you? The credit or the discredit goes to the star. Why do stars shine and why do stars die? Why is that? Because they've been put there by whom? By God, according to the laws of nature, right? They just do what they do. Stars burn and stars burn up. But stars don't get any credit, nor do they get any discredit. But they are part of God's creation. Notice something else. He doesn't talk specifically about this, but I think certainly he alludes to this. Well, what is that? That's a rose. Now we're to the easy question. That's a rose, yeah. What can a rose do? Rose can revert your looking at me like. But what kind of question is it? Rose can bloom, right? If it's not blooming, what's it doing? It's starting to die. That's pretty much all a rose can do. Now there are factors involved with that. You can fertilize your rose. Rose gets rain. Rose can get too much rain, too little rain. And that determines how it blooms or how it dies. But typically, a lot of things may happen to it. But is any of that a credit or a discredit to the rose? No. Not a bit, right? Not a bit. So, the rose is not a moral being. It doesn't have to think about what it does. It just operates by the law of nature, right? Now, let's think about this. Psalm 8 talks about animals. It doesn't specifically talk about dogs or puppies, but I just like that picture, so that's what I use. Tell me some things that a dog can do. Now we're going to experience it a little bit. What's some things a dog can do? Let me just ask you, what's something a dog can do that evidently I do a lot of that I've been talking about? Eat. Dog eats, that's right. What else does a dog do?
Sleep.
Which I do some of that too.
See, smell,
okay. What else?
Bark.
Do you ever do that, Mom? I'm going to act like I didn't see that. What else does a dog do?
Feels.
What?
It has emotions.
Emotions, yeah. Feels. Good. Excellent. Let me ask this. Do dogs like each other? Sometimes. Yeah, you know what dogs do? It's kind of an odd thing, but at a certain point in time in a dog's life, you know, a boy dog, it may be in the neighborhood, and at some point in time in that boy dog's life, he sees a girl dog. Now, I want to be very sensitive about this, but I want to make a point, so I hope that you'll bear with me. And when that boy dog sees that girl dog, he's going to react to that at some point, and vice versa. And when they react, at some point, the girl dog may end up having puppies. And when that happens, that doesn't happen because they talk to each other on the phone. Or because I used to use Facebook, but nobody knows the kids know what Facebook is anymore. Instagram or whatever else y'all use. One of seven gajillion things every day. But anyway, they don't do that. They don't communicate. They just listen to me carefully. They just take what they want. And you know why they do that? What are they acting on when they do that? The old nature, what we call it. Instinct. Listen to me carefully. I know a lot of people who act like dogs. I know old people who act like dogs. I know middle-aged people who act like dogs. And I know young people who act like dogs. And do you know what God calls people who act like dogs? He doesn't say it quite this way, but I think this is the conclusion that he reaches. He calls them sinners. That's what he calls them. He calls boys who take what boys want without giving any thought to it, the realm that God says, yeah, you can take it, but you only take it in a realm where it's agreeable to both and in a realm in which I tell you to. And anybody who says, well, I'm not going to do that, is a sinner. That's just what it is. If you're a sinner. So if you're involved in that kind of activity and you have no right, you, my friend, are a sinner. S-I-N-N-E-R. And sinners, if they don't repent of those kinds of things, are not going to spend eternity with God. Now that's just very quickly, that's enough. But a lot of people that I know act like God. And because they do, they just do. They act instinctive. They almost act without thinking. That's what I'm talking about. They act without thinking about what it is that they're doing. But you know, if you take the most righteous example, this is going to be so profound, you're going to never believe I said it. You know why most people do what they do? Just because that's what they want. And if that's all you do, if you do what you do because that's what you want to do without ever thinking about what is it that God wants, my friend, you're in big trouble. And that's what I try to tell people. Now, that doesn't eliminate it. Please understand, it doesn't eliminate me. Because I'm not talking to you as somebody who, well, I've got this all figured out, and I always think about what I did. I'm not saying that at all. Matter of fact, I'm saying that sometimes I am embarrassed because I don't give more thought to what it is that I do. And I don't consider the fact that I am made in God's image and I will ultimately answer to God. I don't think about that like I should. But if you're sitting in this auditorium this morning and you have forgotten that, you better get it back in your head. Because of these three things that I want to show you. The first thing has to do with relationship. That's being made in God's image. You know, everybody's made in God's image. You don't have a choice. If you're here this morning and you say, well, get out if you like what you're saying. I don't care. It doesn't matter to me whether you like it or not. I'm not taking a vote to see if you like it or not. Everything I'm saying about you this morning is exactly right, whether you like it or not. You have a relationship with God. You're made in His image. He created you. You don't have a choice in that. So you can either accept it And then live your life accordingly, or you can refuse to accept it, and you'll be separated from God forever. That's all. I could just say that while the gathering stand and sing, because that pretty much solves it, right? You have that choice. But everybody has a relationship, and you have a relationship because you're made in the image of God. Everybody's like that. Every single person is that way. So every single person, the things that we're talking about this morning, everything we're talking about applies to every person. I don't care who you are. You have to know that you are made in the image of God and you have a relationship. Now, every relationship, think about this. Every relationship always brings about something else. And the something else is this. Every relationship. I don't care what you have. I don't care what the relationship is. If you have a relationship with something or someone, it always carries responsibility. Some of you in this auditorium this morning are married. You either have a husband or you have a wife. And if you chose to be married, you can't say, I want the benefits of the relationship, but I don't want the responsibility. You can't do that. Not morally, you can't. You can choose to do that. You can choose not to accept the responsibility. But again, you know what God calls you. We're back to that idea. You want to be a father? You want to be a husband? You better understand that you have a wife. And you have responsibility to your wife. And if you're in this auditorium this morning and you're married and you're not fulfilling that responsibility, you better pick it up quick. Because you have a responsibility to your wife. You chose that. You chose the relationship. And she chose it with you. And she has a responsibility. You know, everything gets pretty simple. You know, you talk to people about they're having marital problems. Okay. Are you married? Well, we're married. Okay. Then let me tell you what that means. Get with it. Respond. Respond to her. Well, I don't want to respond. That wasn't my question. God didn't say, okay, you have a relationship, but then decide if you want to respond. Well, that's not the way. You have a responsibility. If you're a father or mother, you have that same thing to your children. If you're a son or daughter, you have a relationship with your parents. You have the responsibility to respond to your parents. You have the ability to respond. You see that? So don't treat that like it's just some minimal thing. No, it's not that at all. And if you don't, as Paul would say to Peter 6, if you don't obey your parents because it's the right thing to do, God's going to hold you responsible. Or, as I like to put it, He's going to hold you accountable. These three things, to me, provide the framework for everything that really every person needs to understand about themselves. They have a relationship with God. Not, listen to me, folks. You don't have a relationship with God as a person, right? You don't have a relationship with God because you're a Christian. Now, because you're a Christian, you have a different kind of relationship with Him. I'm not minimizing that, and I'm not discounting that in any kind of way. But you have a relationship with God because you're born. And that's fundamental to so many things in Scripture that a lot of folks misunderstand. And there are a lot of responsibilities that human beings have, not because they're Christians, but because they're human beings. That many times we don't understand. But if a person knows, okay, I'm made in God's image, just think about this. What if every one of those 7.7 billion people understood this one thing? You're made in God's image. And because of that, then you have a responsibility to respond to God. I just want to ask you a question. If everybody understood those two things, would this world be a different place? Different. It'd be so different that we wouldn't even recognize. Okay? But see, that's the problem. Because people don't even get the first one. That's why when I talk to people, I say, and I try to just show them. I want them to see it. I don't tell them this is who you are and all that. I just say, let's read these passages, and I ask them some questions. What does that mean? Does that mean to just some people, or does that mean all people? Of course, the way I pose the questions, typically, they're pretty easy to answer, and they know. And before long, they pretty much indict themselves. And then we ultimately get to, okay, if you're made in His image, And he holds you responsible for doing what it is that he's told you to do. Guess what? At some point in time, he's going to call you into judgment. You're going to be held accountable. See, that's the part about all this that we don't want to think about. And we're going to talk a little bit about that this morning in the lesson. We'll talk about that some. We'll address that some, at least allude to that some in the lessons to follow over the course of the next several days. But may I just ask you to think about how important this is for everybody to understand? That's why I'm so thankful, as I said, that those of you who are younger are in here, you must realize this. You can't just live your life. We're going to talk a little bit more about that tonight at the devotional. But you just can't live your life doing what you want to do. Now, you can, but you've got to make sure that it falls into that realm that God is pleased with. And it's not that it doesn't just go for young people. That goes for all of us. And isn't that a hard thing to do sometimes? That's why we have to consider who we are constantly and daily ask ourselves, am I doing what God wants me to do? That's our challenge. That's everybody's challenge. And I hope that you'll consider these things. This is a lesson that I think is important. It's not a real deep lesson, but I think it's a fundamental lesson that so many people, and I've got most people, they don't even begin to understand. So, thank you for your kind attention. I put somebody on the spot. You handled it well, so I really appreciate it. Thank you very kindly.